of the conversation with Al McFarland. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Glad to be here and glad to have you along. As always, kudos to the mighty, mighty KFAI. What a wonderful and powerful station, a great voice for the community. We're pleased and proud to be part of the KFAI family. And we're pleased to bring this program beyond the broadcast range to the almost infinite range of the internet. You can be checking us out at kfai.org anywhere around the world. You also can connect with this program on the several digital platforms that we are streaming to, including Insight News at YouTube, Black Press USA at YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on X, formerly Twitter, and we are on LinkedIn. Wherever you're checking us out, we thank you for being a part of the program, part of the experience. We invite you to invite some friends to show up and to listen, to enjoy, and to participate. You can do that by putting a comment in on the comment section if you're on one of the online platforms. And if you're listening on the radio, want to make a comment, just jump online, drop us a note, and we'll shout you out. We thank you for being here. Well, today is a wonderful program. We're coming to the end of Women's History Month, and we have the honor and the pleasure of talking with one of the stellar lights and voices of really of freedom and of education in our country. I want to bring in my co-host today, my partner today, and that's Dr. Irma McLaurin, who is the arts and culture editor for Insight News. And she's got a special guest. In fact, she'll be leading the program. Let me stop right there. Irma, Dr. Irma, how you doing?
I am doing great. I'm back in Mobile, Alabama, and it is my pleasure to be on this show that's entitled She's Seen It All, Celebrating Over a Century of One Black Woman's Journey. And I'd like to begin by introducing our guests, but opening it with a poem that I've written, at least part of it. It's a long poem, so I'm just going to read a sample. But it's titled, When Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith Speaks, the Sound of Our Elders Ring Clear. She has a quote that she says often, mine not to carry. When Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith speaks from the vantage point of 109 and a half years old, the sound of our elders ring clear and we must listen. And so I'm gonna begin with a bio of her. Miss Edith Winthrop Smith was born July 14, 1914 in Grinnell, Iowa. She was the first African-American woman to graduate from Grinnell College in Grinnell, Iowa, which is also my alma mater. The granddaughter of slaves, Edith, at age 108, was designed as was designated, quote, a super ager, end quote, in a study by Northwestern University for her remarkable memory and longevity. In 2022, Grinnell College announced that it would name a new residence hall in her honor. Winford Hall is scheduled to open in the fall of 2024, and we'll get back to that. So it's my pleasure to welcome Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith to the show, and her daughter is with her, Mrs. Alice Smith, to help us. Hello, Miss Edith. Good to see you again. And I have
great to meet you and great. To know about you.
Thank you.
Are new to me.
Great. And so I wanted to ask you questions, just a few questions. How are you feeling today?
I am fine.
Okay. So you grew up in Grinnell, Iowa, and most people don't think about the heartland as a place for Black people. What was it like growing up in Grinnell in the early 1900s?
Ever watch people look at you like you're strange? Some strange creature appeared. That is what it's like to be the only one they see. Mm-hmm. So consequently, it must be a mistake.
And were there other Black families with your families around?
When my family was around, there was no one because we were segregated, not personally or because. It was just because that's where you landed and that's where you stayed. And you didn't go any place because there was no place to go.
Okay.
Unless you are a worker, what were you going to do? You stayed at home.
You didn't get to meet any other Black people.
And that's what your life was like, what was around your home.
But you also had aunties, right? You had your aunts with you. Your mother's sisters were close, and your grandmother also lived in Grinnell.
My mother's close relatives, and we were all together within one block of each other. One aunt had no children, and the other aunt has had lots, but there's no one home. So there are just adults for us to see. Huh. No children at all, because they were all grown and gone. My brother and I were the only two small children.
Ah. So let me ask you this. In 1933, you made a decision to go to Grinnell College. Why did you choose Grinnell College?
Grinnell College was as close as my door. The people from Grinnell College saw two little children off from everybody, and they invited us to come where they had activities. And that's where we went. And it was called Uncle Sam's Club.
Hmm.
The activities were on Saturday and Sunday.
So you had been going to the campus for those activities. Why did you decide to attend Grinnell College?
Well, Grinnell College students were the ones that were playing with us, teaching us games, and inviting us to the parties they had for us. And that was why we were so close to Grinnell College, because they were close to us.
I understand that there were some Black students, the Rosenwald Fellows, who were at Grinnell when you were a little girl, that your parents, your family used to invite over. So you also were able to get to know the college through them?
Well, these were young men, only young men.
Okay.
Did you get to know the college through these young men? Huh? Did you get to know the college through the young men? That's what she
asked. Learned about Grinnell College from the way they acted and the things they said and the places they told us about that they were close to. So that's why the only other Black people we saw were students. So they must be good. So that was part of us, you know, just like an extra family of a family, because they visited us on Sunday.
Okay, so your family had them over for dinner and things on Sundays. So you got to know about the college and their experience as well.
Well, so, they were very nice people because they let all these young men come to our house and they sang and had a good time. And so did we.
Did they get dinner at your house, or did they just get refreshments?
Every Sunday, my mother made jello and put black walnuts inside. And that was something they had never had. So there's no jello. So mama had a big bowl of jello ready for them when they came.
Fantastic. And when you graduated in 1937, when did you move to Chicago?
Well, you know, when you visit people who have other interests, then
answer the question. When did you move to Chicago?
I came to Chicago when we were before we graduated, because there were no jobs in 1936. So there were 12 students who were interested in jobs. They told us we could go and network to see if we could get a job. And we came, and all 12 of us got a job. I was the YWCA, because at that time, a lot of my nurses were coming from the South, and they were hiring these young ladies to work in their homes. So consequently, we had visiting information, not people, but information about the South.
That was fantastic. And after you worked at the YWCA, you also then became a teacher and you taught for 22 years and you're now designated a master teacher. So what does it mean to be a master teacher?
You know something? Ever see a whole room of people who look like you? That was what it was like.
A master teacher. What does a master teacher do?
A master teacher had to introduce many of these young teachers to their children because they'd never seen a black child either. Because they didn't see, we were not educated back in those days. Back in those days, black women were not taught education. Okay. They were taught to cook. And that was different.
When you became a teacher and you became a master teacher, as a master teacher, what did you do?
As a master teacher, as I told you, we introduced children to education and the things that you do when you come to learn. And since they had not built that all the way up, this was what they needed, and that's why they needed a master teacher who had been there and done that.
So what do you think is the most important thing that a teacher can do for her students?
One of the things, your cultural background is so different, and they need all the cultural information that they get. And they needed someone who understood, not to criticize, but to help. And
so you were, yes.
They put the master teacher in the school.
And so what is the most important thing you think you gave your students as a teacher?
I learned.
What was the most important thing that what was the most important thing you taught, you think you taught the students that you taught?
That we respect everyone from the lowest to the top.
Okay.
Everyone was a human being, not an animal. And this is what is hard to understand when all you see has been another color for you.
So teaching people that everybody, regardless of what they look like, is a human being.
Just remember, everyone is important. So many people have been made to feel that they were not important. You're here, but you're not important.
So teachers keep that to say that that their students are the most important, to teach them to feel that they have that. And so I'm going to give you one last question. We are celebrating Women's History Month, and I thank you for joining us. Who would you say was the most important woman or most influential woman in your life's journey?
Amen.
No, you're not answering the question. Who was the most important woman in your life?
Dr. Connard at Darnell College. She took in her first group to camp and taught us about the sky.
Okay. And I also
technology.
And I also understand that your mother, Miss Eva Pearl, gave you some advice when you were a little girl that was very important to you.
Well, you know, you learn when you go to school, you don't know very much and she'll laugh at you. But mother always taught us when we came home, you're the most important person in the world. There's no one like you, nobody. And nobody is better and they have more money. No, nobody is more beautiful, they don't fix up. But no one is better than you. There is one, Edith Smith, and she is it.
All
and
right.
Please don't forget that you're it. And don't let anybody try to tell you you're not it, because I told you that you were, and you are more. I'm the most.
Nobody is better than you, and I think nobody.
Not even, now, you know what she said? Not even the president of the United States.
That is great.
The most important person she knew.
So I think that's a good closing point, Miss Alice. I know you're back there. Thank you so much. And Miss Eva Smith, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for mentioning me.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so we're going to call on Cooper. We're going to have Miss Edith sign off now, and we're going to bring in Dr. Tamara Bubouf LaFontaine. And Tamara, please pronounce your name for us and tell us who you are and how you got connected to Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith. And I think you're on mute. Can you hear us? Yes. So are you able to join us? Okay. Well, I think what we'll do is have you sign off and then come back in again. Because you're on mute right now. And what I'd like to do, Al, I had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Winthrop Smith when I was at Grinnell. I was at my alma mater for a month residency. And Dr. B took me to Chicago to meet her. And having spent about 4 hours with her, I was tired and she was ready to keep going. And her daughter, who is 78, she is 109 and a half years old, and she will be 110 in July. Her daughter was with us, and we had the most delightful afternoon. And as I said, it inspired a poem. And so I'd like to read a bit of this while we're waiting for Dr. B's technical stuff. It's called "When Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith Speaks, the Sound of Our Elders Ring Clear." And it begins with the quote, which is "mine not to carry." So when you ask her about what she encountered, did she encounter racism? You know, how was she treated? Because this was segregation. Then she would say, "mine not to carry." Those are their issues. It's not mine to carry. And so I thought that that would be, you know, a great way to begin. So when Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith speaks from the vantage point of 109 years old, The sound of our elders rang clear, and we must listen. Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith is a living memory. She is our connection to a Grinnell of old, where Black families made ways out of no way, where Black people built communities of love and future aspirations. It was a place where Black women showed business sense and owned businesses on Broad Street. And let me just say, one of her aunts actually owned a business. She made toupees and hair pieces and actually had her own business. Where Mrs. Edith Winthrop Smith, growing up as a young girl, learned not to give attention to inequality and racism. She says with a twinkle, "Mine not to carry, we must listen." In the heartland of Iowa and the town of Grinnell, while she and other family members may have served prominent white people, including then Grinnell College President Nolan, they were not servants in their own minds, in their own hearts, in their own futures. So I'm going to stop there because I think we've got Dr. Tamara back with us. And thank you so much.
I'm happy to be here.
Yes, we got you. So please give us the pronunciation of your full name and a bit about your background, where what you do and how you met Mrs. Edith.
Okay, well, good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Tamara Bulberf, and I am the Louise R. Noun Chair in Gender, Women's, and Sexuality Studies at Dr. Irma's alma mater, Grinnell College. I met Mrs. Edith Renfrow Smith in summer of 2021, so that's about 3 years ago. But I came to Grinnell College in fall of 2019. And I mention that because that was just 3 months after Mrs. Renfrow Smith had been awarded an honorary doctorate from her alma mater. And so when I came to campus, I was very curious about who this person was. And most of the responses I heard mentioned her name, mentioned that she was the first Black woman graduate of the college, and mentioned her age. But there wasn't much more to that. And I felt that that was a very thin summary of a life and a person. And I should also say that part of my scholarship has to do with the history of Black women in higher education. And I was completing a book on the first African-American professionally trained student affairs administrator, Dean Lucy Diggs Slow. And she was another first who often did not have a lot of attention given to what she had done. And so putting that together with what I was hearing about Mrs. Edith Renfrow Smith, I decided that I wanted to investigate much more about her. I wanted to know about her college experiences. And that led to the last 3 years of work that I've been doing with students and members of the Grinnell community.
And you have had a number of students work with you. What has been their experience on this?
Oh my God, transformative. I was just with one of them, Faven Getachew, who is a student from Ethiopia, who was my first of 5 research students that I've had the pleasure of working with. Am I still coming through?
Mm-hmm.
So Faven Getachew was a student of mine in the year 2020, 2021, when we were online due to the pandemic. And after we had a course together, she approached me and asked me if there would be any research that she could do. Given that she was from Ethiopia and we had the pandemic, she knew that it wasn't likely that she could go home for the summer and return in time for the fall. And so she was trying to figure out what she could do while staying here for the summer. And at that point, all I had was a little bit of information about Mrs. Edith Renfrow Smith. I was slated to have a sabbatical in fall of 2021. And I told Faven that maybe we could do some preliminary research to help prepare for my leave. And when I mentioned Mrs. Renfrow Smith's name, Faven said, "I know her. I know that. Well, I know the name." And I said, "How?" And I think this is really important. Faven said, when she applied to Grinnell College, she didn't have the opportunity to visit the campus. When she got the letter, the notice that she had been admitted, the first thing she did was to search the internet to see who, as a Black woman, had gone to that college. And so she found the name Edith Renfrow Smith, and she felt that because another Black woman had succeeded at Grinnell, perhaps it could be a place for her. And so when you ask me what is the experience of students working on this, it gives them a history that otherwise they did not. It gives me of how I'm a Black woman in her 50s, but I'm still and to know and to have sort of learned from Mrs. Renfro-Smith, it's very clear to me that my place here was made possible by her presence here 90 years ago. And so it's been transformative for students to know that they are walking in a legacy, and yes, that part of what they're doing here is building on a legacy rather than starting a legacy. So it's huge for the students who've worked with me, and I think very important for students who have learned about Mrs. Renfro-Smith and her experiences at Grinnell College.
Well, you were kind enough and gracious enough to bring her with me, to take me with you to visit her. And we had a lovely weekend in Chicago, a chance for us to get to know each other, which, by the way, we had met previously at a conference just before you took the position in 2019, and then come full circle for us to connect again at my alma mater. And so after leaving that conversation for about 4 hours, I was inspired to write a poem. And I just want to read a little bit of that before we move on. It says, meeting her in 2024 has lifted me up, made me realize that I can partake as a Black alumna, class of 1973, in the Grinnell College legacy. It is mine to claim now that I know, like that, now that I know people like Mrs. Edith Winthrop-Smith came before me, and that Black families once thrived in the town of Grinnell. Her legacy of belonging in Iowa is now mine to claim. Mrs. Edith Winthrop-Smith has become an anchor, my anchor of Black pride and resilience. Her message, not mine to carry, is an inspiration for me, for Black Grinnell students and Black Grinnell alum today and tomorrow. Her story lets us know whether we stand as one or many, we have every right to be in this space place called Grinnell College. We belong here if we have the courage to believe that it is our legacy to claim. She is also a touchstone for all Grinnellians to feel they belong. And so, as you know, I've been working on this poem for like about four or five weeks now. It's gone through many iterations, but I think at the center of it is something that she said. Her mother taught her early on that it didn't matter how much money people had or how beautiful, you know, on the surface they were, that there was nobody who was better than her. And that she has carried that sense with her as a person, as a teacher, clearly teaching her children to respect, you know, everyone. These have all been points of it. What is the most important or significant things that you have learned from doing this research and getting to know her, visiting her?
How deep her roots are in this town and in the state. I mean, she's a second generation Black Iowan. And so when you talk about belonging, I think part of what she represents for people is that, yes, we've been here. We've been everywhere, but we've been here too. And so when she speaks about Grinnell College as her alma mater and Grinnell as her hometown, she means it very, very deeply. I mean, her people, her mother and her aunts and their families and her grandparents, who were both born into slavery, they were here as early as the 1880s. All right, so you see this picture of her mom from 1900. I mean, she grew up here as a teenager. This was home for her for almost 70 years. And so I think one of the things that I've gotten here is the importance of knowing where you come from and knowing where you belong and not letting anyone tell you that you're an interloper or that there's not space for you. Another thing I will say is that she's really emphasized for me the importance of oral traditions. And I think that's very strong in Black communities. I think often we are told that what's oral is not true, you know, that people are elaborating, you know, telling tall tales. From Mrs. Renfro-Smith, I mean, she is her family's history keeper. This is a role that she inherited from her mother, who inherited that from her mother. So it's three generations deep. This oral tradition is detailed. It is accurate. It is consistent. And I think what I also learned from Mrs. Renfro-Smith is the importance of how we hand down, how we share evidence that we've been here. You know, so for her, from the ages of like 5, 6, she was the one in her family, despite having 4 older siblings, who encouraged her mother to tell those stories over and over. So by the time she applied to Grinnell College in 1933, she knew where her people came from, starting in the 1840s. And as she has shared in different interviews, she says, "I come from a family of fighters," and that includes the women and the men. All right. People who knew their value, people who passed down that sense of inherent value that no one can take away, people who refused to accept less than what they felt they deserved. And so when I think of Mrs. Renfro-Smith, I think about what students already bring to campus that they should be encouraged to value. Yes, it's important that they're at an institution where there are opportunities, but what got them there? And often they have deep reserves of what sociologists would call aspirational capital. So even in your family went to college, who was whispering in your ear, "You can make this"? Who, as my student, Faven Gedichu, my first student who worked with me on this research, her mother, she's first generation college, you know, soon to be graduate at the end of this semester. Her mother does not speak English. Her mother did not go far in her own schooling. Her mother has been essential to her success. Her mother would sit up with her when she was doing her homework in high school. Her mother would tell her, "You are as good as anybody else." And so I think from spending time with Mrs. Renfro-Smith, it makes me think about all those mothers and other people who encourage our dreaming to happen. And to me, that is essential. Knowing that there are people who see the biggest version of you and who contribute whatever they can to helping you feel comfortable in that sense of self. So that's how I would answer your question.
And I think what's important is not so much, I know that her daughter suggested that we not ask her about the famous people she knew, but there is one, which is, and you can tell us the story, is that another alumni of Grinnell, which has a great number like me and other people like Robert Noyce, who invented the Intel circuit chip, Chekhov, who played in Star Trek, and then Irma McLaurin, but Mrs. Edith Winthrop-Smith, is that we also have Herbie Hancock, who is a Grinnell alum. So tell us about how she and Herbie Hancock connect.
Well, 1960, he's an alum, right?
Yes, he is.
His parents and Mrs. Renfro-Smith and her husband were very, very close friends. All right. And Mrs. Renfro-Smith has 2 daughters. Her elder daughter, unfortunately, is deceased, but she was a playmate of Herbie. Renfro-Smith literally has known him all his life. And I think he's 82 or 83. She remembers him as a toddler. She remembers him looking out through his apartment window at their apartment window where her older daughter would stand. And so, yes, and so this is something. Mrs. Renfro-Smith is fiercely proud of being a Grinnellian twice over, both as a little town, as well as a graduate of the college. The moment that she went to Chicago, she would tell people, Black people, about Grinnell College. And there are quite a few people who are thankful to her for having put. I think it comes down to some of the things, Dr. Irma, that you mentioned in your fabulous poem. She said, "This can be your anchor." You know, she said, "You belong there. It's a school that you should have access to." And so Herbie Hancock is one of those other people who remember seeing her and always as having a regal bearing. And I don't know if you when you look at pictures of her, you had a picture of her when she graduated with her teacher's license in 1954, you know, you see how she stands. And she says, you know, nobody in her family, including those grandparents who were enslaved, she says, "We don't come from like a bent over generation, or we are not bent over people. We are people who stand straight." And that presence, you know, and her moving through the world, as somebody very centered in her own being, that's very attractive. And I think very persuasive to people when they are asking, "What can I become?" And she says, "You can go to Grinnell College because it's a place where you can learn and where you should already feel you belong because I was there." And if I can mention one other thing, we have a fabulous dean of the college, Dr. Baronda Montgomery, who's a biochemist and who has this fabulous book called Lessons from Plants. And she's thinking about and researching what she calls pioneer plants. These are those flowers in the concrete, those plants that grow in places where they have no supports. And one thing that she has shown through her research is that those pioneer plants are always thinking about succession. They're thinking about what comes after them. They want more of them to be there. And those pioneer plants actually change the chemistry of the ground in which they have found a way to make a way. And so, you know, I also think that we think about her African-Americans who have followed in Mrs. Renfro's path. They are engaging a space that has been changed because she walked this space. And when I say walk this space, I mean it literally, because her house is a mile away. She lived at home to save money. She worked two jobs and she would walk, you know, that distance, those six blocks from home to campus and back every day. And there's something really important about knowing that people who follow in a groundbreaker's path are following, are able to exist in that space because it is no longer as resistant as it once was. And so that's something that I also hope it gets conveyed, you know, when we can say people went there because she was here, it is literally because this space had to change a bit to have this woman be here, and that her success is something that belongs to all of us who come after her. It's what we built.
I think that's important because one of the things, as I said, I just spent a month at Grinnell in residency working on what I call the Black Feminist Archive Initiative at Grinnell to excavate the Black experience in the Grinnell Archive. So I had 8 students, and you were, of course, one of the faculty who sat in on the course. And what we were doing was trying to find all the materials because they're scattered. And I have been giving material to Grinnell Archives since 1971, when they had my first book of poetry that was published called Black Chicago. And of course, I'm from Chicago as well. So for me, I think what was most significant is that meeting Mrs. Winthrop Smith made me feel like I had a right to be at Grinnell, that I could claim it as my own. Because when I was a student there from 69 to 73, and I took a year off to go to India, but 69 to 71 and then 72 to 73, we used to joke and say, there are no Indigenous Black people in Grinnell. Now we know that is not true. There were actually Black families, more than one, as you have noted. She used to say 3 sisters in 3 blocks. Her mother and her 2 sisters live within 3 blocks of each other, and then her grandmother. And so there was this constellation of Black people. And I think you've told me they're still Black farmers. Her great uncle was the first Black landowner in Poweshiek County, which is the county in which Grinnell. So in that whole area, there was a Black man who had been formerly enslaved, who worked in the gold mines of California, stopped in Kansas, and in Kansas was suggested by someone that he go to Iowa, and he did, and he used that money to free his own family. And so there's a history there that's just now being uncovered. And I think that my experience as a Black student in the late 60s, early 70s might have even been different had I known that there were Black folks, you know, in that space. And now that I know it, I'm just ecstatic, right, about this. As I said, it's given rise to this sort of long epic poem that she has inspired me to write that basically says, we are linked together, as you have indicated, and that in some way she has become that kind of a plant She sort of laid the groundwork, as well as some of those other Rosenwald scholars who are now just discovering. And as we pull this Black history together into one sort of collection, we're now seeing that there's a power and a synergy there that when it's scattered, we don't get to understand. But when we bring it all together under one roof, like I'm doing in my Black Feminist Archive, that we will do with the Black experience at Grinnell, then we begin to understand how powerful and how connected our histories are.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I know that you're working on an article, Al. We're editing it, and you should get it shortly, so it should be in next week's paper. Tell us a bit about what you want to highlight in that.
Well, there's so many things, but one is her girlhood. You know, we talk about Black girl magic now, and that is a real thing, and I love the phrase. And it's both an LA academic sort of lens that looks at the resources that Black girls and women have within that they create and that they use for their own sort of advancement and those and the advancements of other Black girls and women. I see Mrs. a really early example of this energy. I am fascinated by the fact that this family, so that picture of Mrs. Renfro Smith when she was Edith Renfro, when she was the new graduate, in 1937, it is not a Grinnell College photo. It is a photo that her mother arranged to have taken by a professional photographer in Grinnell, right? This photo exists among about 150 that the Renfro Smiths have shared with us. Out of how many? I'm not sure, but 150. And out of that 150, about 7 show Edith Renfro as a girl. The first photo, she's 1 year of age. It's from 1915. And we have these 7 that go up until 1937. And so those photos make me really interested in what this Black family and this Black mother did to develop a woman who became what I call a groundbreaker. Somebody who had a vision of self bigger than what many other people in the wider Grinnell community may have had for her. Somebody who, when I say broke ground, somebody who was able, who persisted, right? She's the third Black woman to be admitted to Grinnell College in its first century, but the first to finish. That tells you something about labor. That tells you something about stick-with-itness, all right? She's a groundbreaker. And what I also see is that she's a person who was supported by people who may have been overlooked by dominant actors. But you have her mother, you have her extended family, you have the relationship that her family created with these Rosenwald scholars, these young Black men who were peppered into the Grinnell College community. If you ask me, they're important on 2 levels. One, they show the importance of support for our minoritized students. You know, they went to the Renfro home every Sunday. They were treated as almost like dignitaries. Mrs. Renfro Smith remembers, and she was only 6 or 7 at the time, that they ate in the parlor. You know, that was the most fancy part of the house. And they had this beautiful meal. And she says, and this is the second thing that is important, she caught a vision of Grinnell College from those young men. Now her mother insisted that all the Renfro children would go to college, and they did. But she's the only one in her family who chose Grinnell College. And I think those young Black men were very significant in giving her a vision of success at the school that was closest to her. So I'm really interested in her first 20 years, in what got her to the point where she could, as she said in an early interview, recruit myself, not be recruited by the college, but recruit herself. And I think her ability to persist the family that she was always connected to. So as somebody who couldn't afford to stay at Grinnell, to live on campus, what she heard every day of her life, and I asked her this just a couple of weeks ago. Every morning she heard, no one is better than you. You are you. And there's something deeply special about you. And so those are the kinds of affirmations and overlooked resources that I think existed not only for Mrs. Renfro Smith, but for other minoritized students that I want to bring to light. So it's this motto, it's these photographs, it's this oral history. And so I hope that that can shed light on what prepared her to defiantly, boldly, powerfully recruit herself to this school and claim it as her own, even though she was the only Black student on campus for the whole time that she was there as an undergrad.
You know, this is such a powerful story, and I want to thank you for joining us and for us being able to have Mrs. Edith Winfrow Smith on. Cooper, if we can just show that image of Winfrow Hall, this is she will be remembered because the college has done something extraordinary. It has named a dormitory, which is the newest dormitory on the entire campus. And it is literally located across the street from the campus in the town. And so Winfred Hall is scheduled to open in September. And maybe, Al, we can broadcast from there. I plan to be there along with Dr. B. But I want to thank you so much. And what I'm going to do is, this is such a great constellation of bringing women together. The last segment, Dr. Tamara, if you want to stay with us, and if not, we understand, we're going to bring on Coach Leah to tell us about what's happening in sports where women have been making a wave. I mean, what I have been astounded at in terms of sports is the number of Black women who have taken over gymnastics. You know, at one point we just had one with Simone Biles. And now Biles, and now we have, you know, and of course, the Williams sisters, but now there's so much that's going on. And so, Coach Leah, I wonder if you can join us. And and what you should also know is that Ms. Winfred Smith was actually very athletic. She counts among many of her achievements at Grinnell that she won letters in many athletic things, swimming, tennis, and this is at a time when they didn't even have women's athletics. They had girls intramural is what they called it, I think. And so good to meet you. We've not met before, although I've watched your show. And so bring us up to date on what's happening in the sports world, okay?
Hi there, everybody, and happy Tuesday. And so right now we are in the thrust of March Madness. This upcoming weekend will be what's called the Sweet 16. And so for the men's and women's NCAA tournament, you're going to see now the top 16 teams that are still standing. And so if you've missed the tournament, the first few rounds, and are just now getting up to speed because you thought that you weren't going to see some of the best basketball, you've really missed out. And I will tell you, after the first game, the first set of games, I was hearing that with NCAA.com, there were over 200,000 people that sent in their predictions with the, you know, with their brackets. And after that first day, only 10, count you, 10 brackets were still even viable. And so with that being said, I want to tell everybody that if you want a second chance at enjoying this March Madness, I spoke last week about sending your predictions in to Coach Leah at InsideNews.com. You can start right now even, you know, because you know now the 16 top teams. And if you want to predict who's going to win on both the men's and the women's side, feel free to just send your prediction. You can send it in as many times as you want. And what I will do is we're going to do a drawing and then a grand prize. The grand prize obviously will be the first person who correctly predicts the winner. And then everybody else that correctly predicts the winner will go in a drawing for a gift card as well. So have some fun, guys. And this is your second chance. Join, you know, send your email to Coach Leah, C-O-A-C-H-L-E-A-H at insightnews.com. Speaking of the March Madness and the Women's Final Four, we have our own Wellness, Wealth, and Winning Conference that we hold each year alongside the Women's Final Four. And when I say we, I have a business partner and co-founder of Tall Girls United, Sylvia Crawley Spann, who I think is going to be joining us. Let's see. I don't see her yet, but I was hoping that she would be able to join us today to talk about our conference. And we have four different events that we host this year. And the first is on Thursday night. We do a what we call the welcome reception, which coaches from around the country that converge on the Women's Final Four for the Women's Basketball Coaches Association Conference. We just want to say, hey, we're here. Let's get together and just, you know, see some old friends, meet some new friends, very low key, but very fun way to just kind of open up the conference with that reception. And then on Thursday, we have what we call the ultimate brunch. And we're adding a new element this year. If you're familiar with TED Talks, we're having our very own TGU Talks. And the two-time WNBA champ, Yolanda Moore, an amazing speaker, will be doing her TGU Talk to kick off our brunch. And then we'll have some yummy Cleveland, Ohio food to munch on. And then we'll have a very interactive panel discussion with some WNBA legends on the panel, and that should be a lot of fun. And then we will conclude that day with a forum where we'll do a little breakout session, and so you can do a little deeper dive with our subject matter experts that are going to be on our panel.
And I understand we actually have Sylvia has joined us, so if you want to bring her in.
Please, yes. Hey, Syl.
Hello there. Hello, everybody.
So great to see you. I love that logo. I love that logo. Yes. So, Sylvia, I was telling everybody about our Wellness, Wealth, and Winning Conference, and I was going through the day's events, and you actually popped on just the right time because I finished talking about the brunch, and then I wanted you to talk specifically about what we call your baby, the fashion show that we have on Saturdays.
Well, let me just tell you, we have so much planned for the whole entire weekend. I'm super excited. I can barely sleep, Leah, right now. But for the fashion show, the theme is called the Tip Off Fashion Show. It is on Saturday, April 6th at the Lounges Content Studio, downtown Cleveland. And the reason why we chose that theme is because it's the same day as the men's Final Four, and the men's games are later that night. So we're playing off the whole basketball theme. So it's a tip off. We will have the national anthem. We will have, the Black national anthem. We will have a warm up, a first quarter designer. And in between the first and second quarter designer, we have an award to give away to a special guest. And then we'll have our second quarter designer. We will then have a halftime entertainment show. And so I don't want to reveal the surprise just yet. And then we will have a third quarter designer. We'll give away some gift prizes in between third and fourth quarter. Then we'll do the fourth quarter designer. And then I'm the overtime. So I'm actually the lead designer for the WBL. I also have my own clothing line. So I'll be the warm up. I'll go first. And then I'll, help everybody backstage. You know how it is backstage of a fashion show. Like, it's just crazy, right? So I'll be helping everybody else. And then I will go at the end to unveil the new uniforms and merch for the new WBL, the Women's Basketball League, that's launching in June. And so one of the last jerseys that I will unveil is the Cleveland Rockers uniform. And we will have some former Cleveland Rockers in attendance. And so we'll have them kind of stand. We'll give them their roses now, pay homage for them, paving the road for the new Cleveland Rockers. So the owner, his name is Ryan Reed of the WBL. He resurrected the name WBL because this league existed in the 80s. And so he's resurrected that, and he's reached out to the women, the former players for the WBL, and he's kind of got them on board as well. Actually, one of them is on his advisory board. So his whole motto is commemorating the past while creating opportunities for the future. So he's given roses to the players who have gone before us, but yet creating opportunities for these college players that you're watching in the NCAA tournament. I mean, there's been some incredible games. There's tons of talent, but unfortunately, there's no place for all of them to go. You know, the league has one expansion team this year with the Golden Warriors. I think they're going to have a women's franchise this year. But other than that, there really aren't any, too many expansion teams. So usually the players who get drafted, more than half of them get cut. And so now when they get cut, they have some place to go. He's also going to reserve some spots for HBCU students and so student athletes. So now going pro is a dream that can come true for them as well. And so we're super excited about that. I'm super excited to unveil the uniforms and the merch. I'm happy that I got to design it. That's kind of my jam. I love to design all day, every day. So, and of course, I'm not just going to bring out some uniforms. That's too much like normal. So because his theme is commemorating the past while creating opportunities for the future, I'm going to mix the new and the old. So we've got new and improved uniforms of some teams that previously existed, like the Detroit Shock, Cleveland Rockers. Those are teams that already existed in the WNBA and they folded. And now he's resurrected those teams. So we're mixing the new and the old because he's creating new opportunities for the future players. And so I'm going to take uniforms, but I'm going to what I call Bridgerton, the uniforms. So they're going to have big skirts and tutus up underneath. And, you know, they're just going to be flowing and nice and big. And then when they get to the end of the runway, they'll rip them off and they'll have uniforms and jersey dresses and athletic gear up under the big old Belle Grand skirts with corsets, and we're going to tie them in the back. And, you know, and so we've got the music to reflect that. Like the music starts with violins playing nice and soft, and then the music kind of scratches and flips to a hip hop song that's very popular that everybody will want to sing along to. So we're very excited. We have tons of sponsorship for this, which I mean, the sponsorship has been pouring in the last hour. We've been working on this for like 6 months, Leah and I, but in the last maybe 2 weeks, the sponsorship dollars are pouring in. We need, you know, all the help that we can get. We're 501c3. Our main mission, and I wasn't here for the first part that Leah talked about, but our main mission is to mentor young girls who are like I was 6 feet in the sixth grade with a size 12 men's shoe. So I was the only 12th grader in my city that looked like me. And I often looked in magazines. I watched a lot of television. I was looking for another little girl that's six. Am I the only 6 feet, sixth grader in the world, you know? And so we don't want little girls to navigate through that by themselves. We don't want them worrying about if the boys are going to ask them to the prom, if they have to, like, pictures, you know? We just want to whisper in their ear and say, hey, young queen, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. Stand tall. Being tall is your, that's your secret sauce, and God just supersized you. So that's our mission, is to help young girls navigate through that. And so our conference is one of the ways that we fund it. And we actually get a chance to do that at the brunch that Leah talked about. We get to mentor young girls and boys, actually. So just
exactly. And that's, yeah, that's great. You've given us a lot to chew on, literally, because you're going to have a tea. And I understand the tallness because my niece played for the Lady Gophers and she was 6'7". Oh. So I understand what it's like to have someone. My sister's over 6 feet. I'm the shorty in the family.
You must be talking about one of my diamonds, Kim Bell.
Yes, that's my niece. Yes.
And also a Washburn alum. We both graduated from Washburn. But
she fantastic.
And I'm so proud of her. She has the life that she lives now in service to others. To my understanding, she's working either still in law enforcement or juvenile.
No, she's actually going back to get her master's. She wants to do more development. So that's a good point. We've got about 60 seconds left, and I wanted to loop Miss Tamara back in. I want to thank you both, Coach Leah and Miss Sylvia, for sharing with us what's going on. And Miss Tamara, what would be the final words you'd want to have us to say about Miss Edith Winthrow Smith, who also was an athlete, you know, in her own time? What should we, what's the takeaway?
I think the takeaway is that we need to know this history and tell this history when we learn it. You know, I am so drawn to the weight of thinking that you're the one and only when it's not true. And I love this work that you're both doing, celebrating the current, the moment, but then also revealing the past. And I think of the word remembering, like re-membering, is putting it back together when it's been pulled apart. And when we remember, we are whole. And there's glory in knowing who else has known your path. Who else has known your path?
And thank you so much. I have to wrap it up. We've kind of run out of time, but this has been a great show. I mean, we've had someone from today and then someone who has spanned 109 and a half years. I mean, how much better could it be to end Women's History Month on the conversation with Elle McFarland than this? Thank you, everyone. We much appreciate your presence and your contributions. Thank you, Dr. B. We much appreciate it. Thank you, Miss Edith and Miss Alice, if you're both still on the line. Enough respect is all I have to say. And so